committee is a committee of the whole of the council, so I won't repeat any of the detail in terms of content of where we are now, but just perhaps talk about process and timing. We've now had three calls, each one of which has had a sort of a summary, and so we now have a version three summary that was sent out a few days ago to the committee. That has already led to some commentary, comments back, which is good news. And we will be having another call, perhaps our last call, in about a month's time. It's in May, on the 8th of May, I think. And in the meantime, I would encourage everybody to direct the version 3 summary to their constituencies to ensure that they're happy with what's so far stated, and to make any points as a result of that review. I think that's probably all we need to say for now.
Okay, Milton, I noticed you've been active on the list of the GTLD committee. Did you have anything you wanted to raise? Milton Mueller?
What were you asking me?
I was just asking if you had any comments or issues you wanted to raise regarding the GTLD committee progress and report.
Well, yes, I think I made them through through email, but I'll reiterate them here. I think that we were asked two very simple questions. Actually, I've been saying this since the Rio meeting. We were asked whether we thought the namespace should be structured, and it's become increasingly clear that our consensus answer to that is basically no, given the context of what the question was. And if it's not going to be structured, then we have no need to continue with a long report explaining, you know, a bunch of other issues related to TLD expansion. And I think for some legitimate reasons, the committee has gotten carried away with confronting all of the issues related to namespace expansion. It has discussed everything from the fees for applications to how to deal with failing registries, all of which are important issues, are legitimate issues, but they're not really what we were asked to do, and I would just like to have a bounded task that we can execute cleanly. And so, as I propose,
Hi, this is Audrey McPlessis from Canada. I'm the Canadian GAC delegate.
Thanks for joining, Audrey. We're just going through a report on the GTLD committee. We've just brought that forward in the agenda.
Great, thank you.
The first thing I did was kind of get also carried away and go through Philip's report in great detail and propose edits. But then after thinking about it some more, I proposed that we simply take paragraph 7 of that report and make that the complete report, because in my opinion it basically answers in and of itself what we were asked to do.
Yeah, I guess my comment, and it's not to do with the content of the report, but really just from a process point of view, I guess we need to be careful that we have a policy development process that's fairly structured and it's defined in the bylaws. And then we also have, I guess, what I'd describe more as ad hoc requests of our time. And we've been dealing with this, I guess, over the last couple of years, where the board asks the GNSO Council for advice. Typically, it sets a time limit on that and says, you know, we'd like advice on this topic by such and such a date. We probably should be careful, just as a council, that we clearly separate how we handle requests for advice with a tight time frame, which I think, as Milton says, we probably have to be fairly careful that we are keeping to topic and not trying to go through a, you know, detailed process of creating policy at the time, but rather just providing advice on a particular question. And it may well be that in response to looking at a question, we may then actually initiate the policy development process. And
Linda Resch.
Thanks for joining, Linda.
Yes, I'm sorry. I'm at the airport and I've had a problem getting in.
Oh,
okay. Well, just
I only have about a half an hour before my next flight.
Okay, that will be sufficient. So we get through the main.
Carrie Carpenter has joined as well too.
Carrie, thank you. So.
Hello, Gabriel speaking.
Who was that? Sorry. Who just spoke?
No, I just arrived.
Oh, okay, that's Gabriel Pinera, is it? Okay. So I guess that's kind of my concern, that I guess if we are starting to, as part of providing advice, get deep into issues and effectively almost creating policy, then we should think about actually We should think about actually using the formal policy development process at that point. So that's really just a general comment. So I guess what I would perhaps recommend to the committee or to Philip is perhaps structure the report such that we identify the bit where we're providing advice on the question, and then perhaps then identify issues that the council has discussed and that, you know, should be the subject of further work. Is that...
I think it's a very helpful suggestion, Bruce.
Bruce?
Yes, go ahead.
Ken, I'm sorry, I'm going to ask for a real quick point of order because we have a quorum, and I think it's extremely important that we at least get a quorum declared and then we can go ahead and transact business. I'm afraid with people popping on and off, when the time comes, we may not be able to do this. So I'll ask you to consider that, please.
Yes, thanks for that reminder, Ken.
Bruce, excuse me, Marilyn is in the process of phoning in.
Okay, I'll just wait a couple of minutes more. Perhaps if we can just finish off on this point then, if that's... You know, if you take that, I guess, as just general guidance, Philip and Milton, if you sort of think that sounds reasonable as an approach?
Yeah, I think it basically agrees with what I propose, that we answer the basic question and not do a lot more and start a policy development.
Marilyn, okay.
Marilyn, thank you for joining me.
I'm so sorry. I missed the change in time.
Right, yes. Okay, well, we do now have a quorum. Marilyn, and for others that have just joined the call, we just had a report from the chair of the GTLD committee, from Philip Shepherd, on progress in looking at whether the namespace should be structured or unstructured in future. And we've just had a bit of discussion about process and how we move forward. And we'll minute that discussion. What I'd like to do now is to, I guess, move on to the agenda formally. And as Ken has pointed out, while we have quorum and there are a few people that are only available for the first half of the call, that we transact the business where we need to formally vote. So firstly, just to confirm, we have quorum. Perhaps if I just read out names that I know that are on the call so far, and if you can just confirm. So I have Philip Shepherd.
Yes, you do. I will be accusing myself of point three, and I think you have Charles Chabon in my stead for that point.
Thank you. Marilyn Kane.
Yes.
Grant Forsyth.
Hello.
Thank you. Jeff Newman.
Yep.
Kerry Carr.
Yes.
Jordan Buchanan. Okay. Tony Harris. Okay. Tony Holmes.
Yes.
Greg Ruth.
Yeah.
Milton Mueller.
Yes.
Un Chun. Okay, not here. Gabriel Pinero.
Yeah.
Ken Stubbs.
Yeah.
Tom Keller's provided his apologies. Bruce Tonkin on here. Linda Roche.
Present.
Lawrence. Not here. Okay. Can I also just formally, anyone carrying a proxy? I'm carrying a proxy for Tom Keller. Is anyone else carrying proxies?
No.
This is Linda Resch. I have a proxy from Jay Scott for the ratification on the vote for Alexander Pisanti.
And I'm not carrying a proxy, but I'd like to introduce myself. This is Audrey Mukwege. I'm the Canadian GAC delegate, and I'm the GAC liaison to GNSO.
Okay, thank you, Audrey.
Welcome. Thank you.
Okay, so we do formally have quorum, both in terms of numbers of people. We have more than half the numbers of members, and we also have more than half the total number of votes. Just to knock off the first item on the agenda to approve the minutes of the meeting in Rio, if I can have someone to propose accepting those minutes.
I'll make my usual proposal there.
Thank you. A seconder for that?
I'll do that.
Okay, all those in...
May I get a copy of the agenda? I haven't been sent a copy. This is Audrey from Canada.
Okay, Glenn, could you send Audrey a copy of the agenda, please?
I will indeed. Sorry, who seconded the minutes?
Jeff Newman.
Thank you, Jeff. Sorry.
Okay, are there any comments or alterations requested on the minutes? Okay, then I'll just put it to a vote. All those in favour of accepting the minutes of the last meeting say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any against? Any abstentions? Okay, we'll note the minutes has passed. Now, the next item is to ratify the vote for the seat 14 of the ICANN board. Everybody has been sent a copy of the voting results listed by a code associated with each person, so each person should check. I've had confirmation from Tom Keller that his vote was correctly recorded. I've had confirmation from the secretariat from Ellen Shanklin to say that her vote was correctly recorded. So at this point, I would just like to put the motion that we vote to ratify that the email vote is recorded correctly, and the email vote is Michael Pallage, 14 votes, Alejandro Pisanti, 6 votes, Philip Shepherd, 4 votes, Barbara Simons, 0 votes. If that vote is ratified, then that would declare Michael Pallage as elected to seat 14. So again, I'll just do a roll call, and if you could indicate whether you vote for or against ratification. So firstly, Philip Shepherd.
You're asking Charles Chaban, I think.
Yes, this is Charles Chaban.
Charles Chaban.
Yes, my vote is recorded correctly.
Thank you. Marilyn Kane.
My vote is recorded correctly.
Grant Forsyth.
My vote is recorded correctly.
Jeff Newman.
My vote is correct.
Kerry Carp.
My vote is correct.
Tony Holmes.
Vote is correct.
Greg Root.
Yes.
Milton Mueller.
My vote is recorded correctly.
Gabrielle Venero.
Yes, it's properly recorded.
Ken Stubbs.
My vote is recorded correctly.
Okay, and I'll vote a proxy for Tom Keller as the vote being correctly recorded. I'll vote myself as having correctly voted. Linda Roche.
And it's for Jay Scott. It's recorded correctly.
Okay, so we have 13 members voted in favour of ratification. And we have... I'm just going to do the adding of the votes now because 1, 2, 3... we have 6, 7, and we have 18 votes.
2 of them by proxy, that's correct.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah. Okay, so I'll declare that the vote is ratified, and Michael Pallage is appointed to seat 14 of the board, and that's to be taken up, I believe, in June. Is that correct, Louis, at the June board meeting?
Most likely, that's the plan. The bylaws provide that the new board takes its seat at a simultaneously event that still does depend upon the nominating committee completing part of its work before June.
Okay. Now, the other thing I want to do is just discuss any adjustments to the process for Board Seat 13, which I now want to kick off. It's been suggested that before calling for nominations, it might be appropriate to formally seek confirmation from the current candidates, which would be Alejandro Pizzanti, Philip Shepherd and Barbara Simons, that they wish to continue their nomination for consideration for Seat 13. And it's perhaps appropriate to wait, say, until Tuesday following the Easter period for the existing candidates to indicate whether they will stand. At that point, I will then allow 7 days for any new nominations.
Bruce? Just a point of order.
Yes, go ahead.
Jeff Newman, I think Barbara is unfortunately ineligible for this because she's from North America. Otherwise, the other two, I think, I think that's a good idea.
Okay, thanks for pointing that out, Jeff. And that of course, is an issue for anyone wishing to nominate at this point, that they may not be from the North American region, given that we have ratified Seat 14. Okay, so, and I'm not sure, I haven't actually got the region, but I'll confirm that with Barbara, that she's from the North American region. But I want to confirm Alejandro and Philip as candidates. Then I will open the period up for 7 days for nominations, which would be from the Tuesday next week until the following Tuesday. And then what I propose is that we have a couple of day break after that before we actually start the voting and issuing of the ballot to allow the ICANN secretary and ICANN and the GNSO secretariat just to make sure that all the administrative details are correct before launching the ballots.
This is Audrey Mukwege. May I ask a question?
Yes, sure, go ahead.
I actually don't have a copy of the agenda, and I'm wondering if somebody could email it to me right now.
Yes, I'll do that.
Oh, thank you. Do you have my email address?
If you're online...
Could you send it to me too, Gwen, please, Tony Harris?
Yes. Tony, you've just joined?
5 minutes ago, yeah. Sorry, I didn't want to interrupt.
Okay.
The agenda's on the web.
It is, that's correct.
Oh, is it? Milton.
Yeah, it's if you go to dnso.org to the homepage, and then up in the upper left-hand corner, there's a link to the agenda for this meeting.
Oh, great, thank you. Yeah, I don't need it sent to me anymore, thank you.
Okay. So just sort of... clarifying that, again, just to run through, what I propose is that we allow some time for the current candidates to confirm whether they wish to continue to stand, then a 7-day period for any new nominations for Seat 13, then a couple of days for the administration to be completed before commencing the ballot, and the ballot will be run the same way that we ran the ballot for Seat 14. The only thing that we do have the option of doing, and this is just for, again, for the council to consider, I have been advised by the ICANN General Counsel that under the bylaws we can actually carry out a vote entirely via written ballot and via email. And therefore, in terms of a strict legal definition, there isn't a requirement to follow that up with a ratification. However, I still think there's value in formally ratifying it at a formal teleconference. But I'm open to comments or suggestions on that proposal.
Bruce, it's Marilyn. May I speak?
Yes, go ahead. Yeah.
I would support the idea that we continue. We don't have elections all that often. I would support the idea that we continue the ratification at a teleconference. If we were, if we needed to do this on a, you know, each meeting, that would be one thing. But given the seriousness of electing a board member, I don't think it's really too much to ask for us to confirm the vote following the paper ballot by a teleconference. So I would support continuing this practice for board seats in particular.
Yes, that's my view also. Any other comments? Okay, well, I'll make sure that we've appropriately minuted that procedure and certainly inform the current candidates of the result of the seat 14 and request that they confirm that they wish to stand for seat 13 and provide them with the information on the process. Okay, the next item on the agenda is the Deletes Task Force. Now, on the original agenda, I had placed that we would vote on the Deletes Task Force recommendations. Following the issuing of the agenda, we did receive some input from the ICANN staff, and in particular the ICANN General Counsel, that some of the wording of the recommendations may unduly restrict the operations of registrars, and there could be extenuating circumstances where a registrar may wish not to delete a name to protect the interests of a registrar. That's, I guess, what we... So my proposal at this stage is that we don't vote on the Delete Task Force recommendations at this meeting. And if... I don't know, is Jordan Buchanan on the call at all? Okay.
Bruce, this is Jeff Newman.
Yes, go ahead, Jeff.
I talked to Jordan. I'm not sure if he might be confused about the time change, so we might actually hear from him in a half hour. But in a call that I had with him yesterday, he wanted to make a proposal to extend the task force out a couple weeks to address the general counsel's concerns. I'm not on the task force, so that's all the information I have, but I would certainly support extending the time for the task force.
Yeah, I think I did see the posting on the Deletes Task Force. I think Jordan did forward to me, and Jordan did state that it was the task force's request that the task force be given 2 weeks to consider the input from the ICANN staff and present that any modifications to the report to the board, to the council. I also personally sent a message to the council suggesting that we may wish to consider using the same process that we did on the transfers and the WHOIS reports by creating effectively a focus group of significant registrars and registries to have a look at the actual implementation of the recommendations, particularly in the context of the existing registrar agreement, and the current registrar accreditation agreement does include a clause that allows for extenuating circumstances, and we may wish to continue that clause or further define what extenuating circumstances are possible, and that's the sort of thing that I think would benefit more from an implementation committee style approach than that the task force can then get some input from that implementation committee before it then sends that on to the council.
Bruce, in the case of the WHOIS and transfers task forces, as I recall, the output of the implementation group went back to the task force for its consideration.
That's correct, it did, yes.
Bruce, I'd like to comment, and I think Tony might want to as well, if I might, about the helpfulness, really, of having the implementation committee's input. And originally, I think that the task force, both transfers and WHOIS, was very cautious because we thought that the implementation committee was taking over the work. But after clarification and agreement that the implementation committee's work came back to the task force, we found the input extremely helpful in helping us to assess the feasibility of implementation and made modifications in both cases in our recommendations. So I would speak in support of how effective that process was to both the WIS and transfer.
Thank you, Marilyn. Did you want to comment, Tony Harris?
No, that's okay with me.
Bruce?
Ken, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, there's somebody who's clearly in an airport. Maybe they can use their cell phone or something.
I don't have a mute.
Oh, okay.
But is there a mute through the meeting number?
There is. Yeah,
yes,
I think if you,
I will
you
check
dial
that.
4, I think you can find out some instructions
okay.
to do that.
All right. I'll check.
Okay. Anyone else want to comment on that as a process?
Bruce, I just wanted to make one addition to my comment. I think that we have a new opportunity here since staff is we're close to having staff available for the PDP process when we're fully into that. And I guess I would just say, and it probably goes without saying, that it would be really helpful to the implementation committee and to the task force, if it's possible for the ICANN staff to dedicate, you know, the necessary time to participate actively in the implementation committee. I think that would be a very valuable addition. I know that the staff has tried to do that as time permits in the past, but maybe that could be added in if Louis feels that time is available to do that.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember, perhaps Louis may remember, but with some of the implementation committees, I think we did have some involved. I think Dan Halloran participated in one or both, but my memory's...
Yes, he did participate to a minor degree. I think we're getting to a state where we can provide a bit more resources on that now.
Okay, well, I guess what I'd like to recommend then is that we... I'll liaise with the chair of the Deletes Task Force regarding creating an implementation group to provide input into that task force, and the implementation group would have membership from the task force as well as membership from a few registrars and a few registries as we did last time. I don't think there's anything really major in terms of, from an engineering point of view, I view the task force recommendations as being the sort of right high-level business objectives, and then what we need to do is take that down one level to detail, and that's where we just need to have a look at the exact wording of what will eventually end up being in the agreement. So, you know, having a look at some of the existing contractual wording and some just clarification on future wording and future processes. So I don't imagine that that should take any more than a couple of weeks from an implementation committee point of view, rather than the 4 weeks that it took for transfers and WHOIS that were generally much larger reports.
And then, Bruce, we would support, I believe, then the recommendation of the task force that they have another 2 weeks to assimilate that into their recommendation back to council.
Yeah, I'm just mindful of what the time frame that will mean. So that will essentially probably push it to vote into the June time frame rather than the May time frame.
Okay.
Because if we have a couple of weeks for the implementation committee to look at the report, we have a couple of weeks for the task force to consider that, and the council should itself have enough time to review the you know, the final output before it's being asked to vote. So that probably pushes it into June. So I'm not saying that that's good or bad, but just pointing that out.
Bruce?
Yep.
Yes, Ken. Frankly, I'd rather make sure that we get it done the right way, and if it means we have to take a few extra weeks to button it up and make sure that it's implementable, it's well worth it.
Yeah, I think one of the things just, and you know, I'm cautious of using the terminology of security and stability, but We are talking about deleting names, and if you do delete a name and it's a critical name, such as, for example, it's associated with a name server, which in turn is associated with thousands of names, it can have a very significant impact. So deletes is probably one of those areas that we do need to take the time over and make sure we have it right. Okay, well, what I want to perhaps get a council resolution on this as guidance, and I think the council resolution should be that the chair of the council will liaise with the chair of the deletes task force for the creation of an implementation group, and that implementation group will provide input into the deletes task force. And the deletes task force will have 2 weeks to consider that input and present that to council. Do I have a seconder for that proposal?
I'll second it, Bruce.
Thanks, Ken. Any further discussion on that? Okay, I'll put that to the vote then. All those in favour say aye.
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 Any against? Any abstentions? Okay, I'll note that it's passed unanimously. Okay, that's probably all on the agenda that actually requires formal voting at this stage. The next item on the agenda that I'd like to deal with is a presentation from the nominating committee. I believe we have Linda Wilson on the call, is that correct?
That's correct.
Linda, perhaps if you could just update the council on the process for selecting the 3 seats on the GNSO council that are selected by the nominating committee.
Yes, I'll be glad to do that, Bruce. It would be helpful to us if I also gave you a quick briefing on the general functioning of the committee, but I promise it won't take much of your time.
Yes, that's fine. Go ahead.
The new process that the nominating committee was designed as a result of the at-large study committee study and report and the discussion in the community, and then the subsequent evolution and reform committee's extensive discussions with the internet community, and finally the bringing forth of the final report and the board's approval that happened last year. It's important to remember that this nominating process is not an election, but it's still a broadly based opportunity for the internet community to participate, and we are eager for that participation. The NomCom itself is composed of delegates chosen by the various bodies within ICANN and chosen according to specific criteria. For example, their integrity, their intelligence, their wide contacts, their commitment to the success of ICANN, no commitments to specific candidates, acting as individuals, not as representatives, etc. There is a specific set of criteria that they must meet. We have not yet a fully seated NomCom. We're missing a couple of members. We don't yet have a delegate for the academic and similar organizations, and the Root Server Advisory Committee has not yet placed anyone on the nominating committee. But other than that, we're fully composed and functioning. Another important point about the NomCom selections is that they are final, with no further ratification or approval required. And this is a responsibility we recognize as very significant. It weighs heavily upon us. There are 16 positions to be filled with 19 terms of duty. That's due to the staggering of bringing on the new people in some of the seats. We are aiming to conclude our selections in time to seat all by the Montreal meeting. This is a very tight time frame for us. We are still aiming hard at that and hope to be able to achieve it. It's important to realize that ICANN doesn't stop functioning if somehow that schedule were to slip. The ICANN board has members on it who would continue to function, but all of us are eager to help implement the new reform structure and to seat people as a result of this nominating committee process. Just to remind you, there are 8 seats to be filled on the board, 5 on the Interim at-Large Committee, and 3 on the GNSO Council. That doesn't add up to 16 because there is a short term from the assumed Montreal meeting to the annual meeting of the ICANN in 2003. The board, the nominating committee has not yet addressed the issue of whether we try to fill those short terms with people who will continue on to the end of the first term, but that is an issue that we will address in the future. It's another critical thing for everyone to understand is that all of the positions use the same core criteria, and those are the criteria that are in the bylaws for the selection of directors. There is some variation in the eligibility requirements among the 3 bodies. There are some additional considerations. For example, for GNSO, it's important that people have some familiarity with, for the GNSO Council, some familiarity with the generic TLDs that would be more advantageous than experience with the CCTLDs, for example. And for the at-large committee, we're looking for particular skills that would be particularly helpful for them at this early stage of the existence of that group. In our search, we are seeking to balance the directors, for example, for the board, balance the directors that are selected through the supporting organization and constituency-based process. We're looking for distinguished individuals who will place the public interest ahead of particular interests, people who have deep experience, have demonstrated good judgment and open mind. Clearly, they need to be knowledgeable to a certain extent about ICANN, although they may have less deep knowledge than some of the people who are appointed to the councils or the at-large committee. We're looking for senior state persons, if you will. At the same time, we are clearly not looking to bring on people who expand the mission. All of our work is within the mission and core values of ICANN as recently approved and stated in the bylaws. So this concept of balance is important, balance in skills and experience in all 3 groups for which NOMCOM is making a selection. And we have just issued a request to each of those groups for further information that will help us when we come to making our decisions. Our first task, of course, will be to ensure that the candidates that come into the pool are qualified and meet the eligibility and criteria. Then those that are qualified, we're looking for the very well qualified, and from amongst that group, we will try to make our decisions using our best judgments, which ultimately are subjective. We are doing extensive outreach and will welcome further assistance in bringing this search to the attention of groups who care and have value to contribute. We've reached out to all the different constituencies within ICANN and to other groups and lists as we have been given information to do that. Our NOMCOM members are at the moment very vigorously engaging in this outreach and in their own recruiting. NOMCOM members have an assignment to bring in some candidates themselves, that is, to make a recommendation and to encourage those they recommend to submit a statement of interest. That's the strategy we're using through the entire process, the encouragement of recommendations and the encouragement of statements of interest, only those who complete a statement of interest will actually be reviewed by NOMCOM. That is, no one for whom we just receive a recommendation will be in the candidate pool unless they complete and submit the statement of interest. But we do very much want those who submit recommendations to encourage the people to send in the statement of interest. That kind of activity is very important to this process, especially because of the short time, but also because some very excellent people need to be encouraged. In some cultures, it's not really proper to put yourself forward. In other instances, people may be intrigued but not yet have a full understanding of what's entailed, and we need the assistance of members of the community in bringing these candidates to the fore. The reason we're using the recommendation process is to enhance the pool, but recommendations are not required, and the identity of the recommender is not a factor in the consideration of the candidates. Endorsements and lists of signatories will not influence our decision-making. And this is another way in which this process is different from an election. We are very genuinely and seriously interested and committed to high integrity in our own work, very careful and very fair consideration of the candidates. We have no preconceived notions about specific candidates, but of course all of us on the NOMCOM are charged to bring in candidate recommendations for consideration along with those that will come in from the community. The final point I'd like to make before asking Pindar to contribute is that the committee has developed its own code of ethics. It has stated its objectives. It's published its procedures, which includes both of those things, and in a day or so, the biographies of the members of the committee will be posted along with identification of which body and ICANN have delegated them to serve on the NOMCOM. So our effort is to be very transparent about our process and to do many things that as much as we can to generate respect and confidence in this process. We feel the weight of this responsibility heavily. All of the members, by the way, have committed to the code of ethics in a formal way. And as one final thing, I should say that were a member of the NOMCOM to breach that code of ethics, it would be grounds for removal, and we have a process in place by which that could happen. We hope and expect that that will not happen. Let me turn to Pindar.
Thank you, Linda. I think you've covered, I think, all of the bases. All I would like to add, and perhaps Grant may also chime in, is we spent a lot of time, again, designing the procedures within the committee, as Linda's mentioned. We have the code of ethics. We have the confidentiality framework within the committee. But the real crux of the matter is this is a quality-in, quality-out process. And what I mean by that is that the quality of the output from the NOMCOM in many ways is dependent upon the quality of candidates that submit these statements of interest. So again, we want to outreach to using all possible means to get these quality candidates coming forward. And on that basis, and as we see the types of candidates that come through, obviously we will make and judge what factors will become important. So in many ways, it's in some sense a moving target as the types and qualities of candidates come forward, as decisions about the composition of the board, for example, the ratification early in this call will affect, no doubt, the geographical requirements within the existing bylaws. So it's everything will be a work in process, but it's a quality in, quality out. And we very much want to encourage you to think very deeply about the types of qualities, skills, and individuals who you may know who you think would best serve the interests of ICANN as a whole and the GNSO Council and Interim ALAC, and make your recommendations and statements of interest. Grant, would you like to add anything?
Thanks, Binder. No, I think that you and Linda have correctly characterized the work that we've done to date, and I think given the assurances as to procedure, et cetera, which have been established within the group, I would just reiterate your call and urging of fellow ICANN members on the council to take up the challenge and extend the invitation to worthy candidates or potential candidates to put themselves forward for consideration. I think, as you say, the greater the pool of suitable candidates, the greater likelihood of us being able to make worthy selections and appointments to the various ICANN bodies.
Linda?
I want to make sure that I express my appreciation to the GNSO Council for giving us this opportunity to talk with you on a teleconference where you have many other things to discuss. We're here. We'd be happy to answer questions that you have either now or online.
Thank you, Linda. It's Bruce Tonkin speaking again. I just wanted to just clarify a couple of things. The first one is your intent in regard to the three seats on the GNSO Council is to fill those by the June ICANN meeting. Is that correct?
Yes. We're hoping to do all of our work by the June meeting in Montreal.
And you made a couple of requests of me for information about the GNSO Council. One was an idea, I guess, of the activities over the next couple of years that the Council would be looking at, and I've forwarded on to you pretty much what I sent to the Council, list with the added suggestion that Marilyn made, that one of the challenges is also to coordinate amongst the other supporting organisations and advisory committees of ICANN as well, rather than just be entirely focused internally.
Yes, we've just done that, and thank you very much.
The second request you made of me, which is which I guess I read today in my time, was you're looking for some information on what skills the current council had in-house in terms of amongst the members of the council, and it seemed like you possibly look at using that as a potentially one of your criteria for finding a new candidate that potentially fills gaps in skills. Is that how you see it? Or perhaps you could explain how you'd use that information.
Yes, our basic focus is on the criteria, the eligibility requirements, and the additional considerations that are announced in the formal call. When we're faced with multiple candidates who meet all of those requirements, we're then also looking to see how best might we support the council by adding people who complement what is already on the council, keeping in mind that our role is to bring some balance and some different perspectives, and in particular this criterion of placing the public interest ahead of any particular interest. It's hard for us from the outside to know what the kinds of skills and experiences are that council members have, that so that we could be helpful in this regard. In the end, the nominating committee will make its decisions, and they will be independent of us, you know, our specific request that you might make. But you're giving us that information is of help to us. It will enhance our decision making, and we certainly would like very much to be informed. In addition to the original request I sent you, Bruce, I responded to you early this morning on sort of clarifying it, and you may not have seen that yet, but I'm hoping that will help.
Yes, I guess the clarification, The difficulty is that that information that you've requested doesn't exist and I have to create it.
Right, we realize that. We're not going to be at the decision stage yet for a little while, and so if it is possible for you to do and if you agree that it's a good idea, then we'll welcome that information.
Bruce?
Yes.
Bruce, it's Marilyn. Might I ask a clarifying question?
Yeah, go ahead, Pam.
Would it be helpful to you, each of the council members submitted to you their, most of us maintain current bios. Would that would that be helpful in as a backgrounder?
Yes, that's helpful. What is, and that's certainly better than not having them, and by a good bit. But what we're really, if you really think about what we're trying to do, we're trying to fill in a matrix of skills and experience, or at least be attuned to that. If you were trying to select someone for a corporate board in a for-profit organization, there's a range of things you want to have around the table.
Mm-hmm.
Corporate governance, investor relations, shareholder relations, product or technology, financial acumen, et cetera. Teasing that out from a set of bios is harder to do than it is if people.
I guess I'll be sort of reluctant to jump in and try and do that myself.
So what I suggested was, you know, I put this dilemma before Bruce to say if there is something that you can do to tell us, or if you just want to say, gee, we really wish we had on the council someone or some folks who had such and such an experience. We invite you to tell us about that.
Linda, this is Pinder. May I just add 2 points to this? Again, this consideration of skills, I think it would also be helpful to view that within the context of the first set of questions that we sent to Bruce, which is what, in the council's opinion, will be the challenges that the council and the GNSO will face in sort of the not-too-distant future. So the second point being is also that there are other considerations that the NOMCOM has to bear in mind, again, when we have the pool of fully qualified, and that's those provisions within the bylaws. For example, the provisions with respect to geographical diversity. And if you note in our formal call, the way we structured it, when we listed the GNSO Council, we did it by region. And, for example, there's none yet selected from the Africa region. So these are things to bear in mind.
Oh, there's also an eligibility requirement that we will have to deal with, and we do not yet have it figured out how to do it, and that is that we would not be able to seat on the council anyone who has the same employer as someone who is currently on the council, and that goes to the subsidiaries and affiliates and all that sort of connection. And that's spelled out in the bylaws. It's referenced in the formal call. And somehow between now and the time we make these appointments, we're going to have to figure out with you how to get the information that
okay,
will allow
because
us to
the,
sure
the information that we publish, I suppose, is I think our country of citizenship, I believe, is the approach. I have had some questions about that process because some people that are Jordan Buchanan, for example, is a citizen of New Zealand but lives in the United States, for example.
In our statement of interest, we've asked for both citizenship and residency, but our compliance will be with the criteria as they are stated in the bylaws.
And is that related to citizenship? Is it... Linda, do you know?
Yes, I believe it's citizenship.
Right.
And if they're dual nationals, we do ask them to list both.
But besides that, Bruce, we did, I do recall, Linda, it's Marilyn, I do recall this extensive discussion at the onset of NUCO before it was ICANN about making sure that employees of a company which might have affiliates and subsidiaries did not end up in multiple positions, and I think that remains an excellent point. But as you said, perhaps a challenge to identify how to make sure that information is disclosed.
Yeah, I mean, we are smart people on the NOMCOM, but we don't really know all the affiliates and subsidiaries of organizations. And
yes,
it may even be true that council members don't know that about their own organization.
Depending on the size of their organization.
Yeah, that's
yes.
right.
Yes. And the other question I had for you is if people were providing bios, for example, is that something that you would keep within the...
Yeah, we're not planning to post the what you send us to respond to this question. We just need it for our own use.
Okay. I think from my point of view, if I coordinate the process, what would be useful for me is probably one paragraph bios from members of the council, and then in parallel with that, I'll try and consider a set of criteria, if you like, similar to what you were talking about with the board and post that to the council members for consideration. I find it's an interesting process that you're using because we could also be using this process in the future in our selection of board members in that would be useful to be able to apply a similar process.
The list of key challenges or matters that you will be looking at in the next few years is something that we will, now that we have them from all three units, we'll be giving to the NOMCOM members and expecting that they will draw on them in their conversations with candidates that they're trying to recruit or in responding to questions. We had not planned to post them on the website or anything, although we might do that with the one that has been sent in by the board because it speaks for the organization as a whole.
Right. Okay.
But whatever we post, we would not post without permission from the source.
That's good, yes. Particularly if we, you know, some of the information you've asked is sort of getting in the area of personal data and that's...
Absolutely,
yes,
right.
Yeah.
We're being very careful about privacy and confidentiality.
Okay. Any other questions for the nominating committee?
I have one, Tony Harris.
Yep, go ahead, Tony.
Yes. I'd just like to reconfirm what the criteria is for the eight board seats as regards geographic diversity. In the eight seats, can we assume that at least one per geographic region will be a criteria?
The requirement we have is that the directors who are citizens of countries in any one geographic region may not exceed five, and that the nominating committee must ensure through its selections that at all times the board includes at least one director who is a citizen of a country in each of the five geographic regions. So we have that range to deal with, and we will be looking at what members are already confirmed to sit on the board. There are only a couple now. The rest of the seats are open and can be filled with either continuing or new names, depending upon the outcome of this process. Does
okay,
that
then.
Go to your question?
Yes, thank you.
This is Pinder again. Again, this is going back to a comment earlier that I made about sort of moving targets. As the seats and as the positions become clear, obviously the NOMCOM will need to consider that in its deliberations.
Yes, given the action that you took this morning, in terms of ratifying that vote, we now the NOMCOM will now know that as soon as you publish it that there are two North Americans on the board. That would be Lyman Chapin and Michael Pelage when he is seated, and the other member is from Mohamed Diop, who is from Africa, and his is a continuing seat because he's nominated to the board by a supporting organization.
And my expectation is that the seat 13 will be decided at the council meeting in May.
Uh-huh. One point I would raise, it has come up in our nominating committee more than once, is the responsibility of not only for geographic diversity, but also for cultural, ethnic diversity, gender diversity. members of the nominating committee have pointed out that the board doesn't have very many women on it now, and that the nominating committee doesn't have very many women
on it now. Nor does the council, actually. So.
And, in fact, on the board and the nominating committee, the only woman is the same woman. So we need to, in our recruiting, bear in mind that both women and men have talent and expertise to bring to this, and that there are quite a few out there. They have not surfaced in the past. That doesn't, in the nominations, that means we need to do a little harder work.
This is Pinda. Just to add to Linda's statement earlier about the composition of the board that we know, I understand that also from North America there will be John Clemson, who will be the Internet Architecture Board liaison. So from North America there will be Lyman, Chapman, and John Clemson.
The requirement on the geographic only applies to the board directors.
Yes, I wanted to just ask that question. John,
yeah.
John would be non-voting, wouldn't that be right?
That's right.
Okay.
Oh, sorry, yes, he's actually a liaison. The liaison, that's correct.
Right.
No, but it's important because the perspectives are available to the board, and this is a global board, and we very much want it to be broadly representative.
A question for will the NomCom be able to put members of the NomCom onto the board?
No, we're prohibited from being a candidate during the term in which we sit on the nominating committee. And that is also true for anyone who might be involved in one of the ICANN bodies for which we make selections.
Good, thank you.
Some would regard that as a benefit of serving on the NomCom.
Yes. Well, I think I'll draw this discussion to a close. I thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us, Linda and Pinda. I'll endeavour to try and get responses to your questions as you provide them. But just bear in mind that sometimes the answers are not readily available. So.
We do understand, and we do really appreciate your giving us this opportunity to talk to all of you at once. Thank you and goodbye.
Thank
Good.
You
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Agenda? Let's find it.
Bruce, it's Grant Forsyth here. I have to drop off the call now, too, if I may, so I'll pass my proxy to Philip, and should he have to drop off, then to Marilyn. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Grant. The next item on the agenda is the WIPO recommendations.
Also, I just would like to say that I just joined. It's Florence on the call.
Oh,
yeah.
Good. Thank you.
Jordan and I just joined as well.
Jordan,
I apologize for that. Not very good at reading emails, apparently, and adjusting to new times.
Yeah, it's the same for me. Made a mistake.
Well, that's no problem. I'll fill you in. We've had a discussion on the deletes task force, Jordan, but I'll fill you in separately on that. The next topic is the WIPO recommendations. We have been asked by the ICANN board to comment on the WIPO letter by the 12th of May. So in the board meeting, which I think was the board meeting that preceded the Rio meeting, it's resolved that the board hereby requests the president to inform the government advisory committee, the supporting organisations and the other advisory committees to provide the bodies with a copy of the text of the letter from WIPO, invite them to provide no later than 12th of May with any comments. So what I've done on the council list and on the agenda for this meeting is provided a copy of the or a link to the letter from WIPO, and note also that the Government Advisory Committee did consider this letter during its meeting in Rio, and the Government Advisory Committee did support the or endorse those WIPO recommendations. So I guess at this point I'll perhaps open up for just general comment from council members, if you'd let me know if you'd like to speak to this topic.
I'd like to be in the queue. It's Marilyn.
Okay. Marilyn, anyone else?
Milton,
anyone else?
Philip,
anyone else? Okay. Lawrence, would you like to, perhaps coming from an intellectual property point of view, perhaps it would be useful to get some input from that side?
Yeah, definitely, I will.
Will you put me on in the queue, please, also, Bruce?
Ken, okay. Anyone else?
Oh, Thomas here. You can get me into the queue, please.
Okay, Thomas, thanks for joining us. Okay, I'll start with Marilyn.
Thanks, Bruce. I think it's both important for the council to clearly discuss this, and so I'd like to contribute to that, but I'd also like to preface that by making a recommendation to council that we try to segregate discussion about existing UDRP, pull that out, move that aside, and focus in on what in effect is a suggestion that has been supported by the Government Advisory Committee, but did have some members of the Government Advisory Committee who did raise and express some concerns. What this appears to me to be is the extension of an effort to extend an existing uniform dispute resolution procedure, which was developed for a specific procedure, into space where there's not as much clarity of law or as much rigor in how that interpretation of law might happen. So I would suggest that council, in its comments, suggest that the existing UDRP be maintained expressly for the purpose for which it was developed, and not extended, and that separate discussions be undertaken about the appropriateness of developing a dispute resolution procedure or process and what the criteria would be to base that on. I will say I have significant reservations about both extensions, but I would like to reserve the comments about those reservations until later. And my comments now are to propose to council that we strongly recommend keeping the existing UDRP completely out of any discussion about extension. It's not appropriate to do that, and if there were to be a new uniform dispute resolution procedure, I believe it would have to have separate criteria developed for both of the new uses that are presently proposed.
Okay, thanks, Marilyn. Milton?
Yes, I'm consulted with our constituency about this, and there's no support for extending the UDRP to additional kinds of rights to names. There's some very strong opposition from some quarters and a complete indifference in others, but there's simply no support for it in our constituency. One of the reasons for strong opposition are concerns about freedom of expression rights related to international governmental organizations. There's a feeling that the IGOs have their own top-level domain within which they can set up their websites, and that attempts by other websites to reference those names and make commentary are frequently legitimate exercises of free speech, and that we don't want to see the UDRP extended into efforts to basically shut down critical sites about international organizations. And we think that some of the international organizations that are requesting this have not done their cause a service, because much of the case that they've made really sounds like they just do want to shut down critical websites rather than really being concerned about cyber squatting or fraudulent uses of domain names. So we would oppose this particular recommendation.
Okay, Philip?
Yes, I think I'd probably like to echo the sentiments of both the last two speakers. I think it's clear this is a process that I followed fairly closely in terms of the development of these recommendations, and it's clear that it's going to be necessary for us, I think, to separate the two things. One of the first question is the merit in the recommendations coming out from WIPO 2, yes or no? And secondly, should we do anything about that? And I think separating those indeed from what we have as an existing UDRP process related to trademarks is absolutely the right way to go, because there are a whole set of differences between these recommendations. And I think probably at some point the main question we need to do is to assess if the perception of WIPO is right in terms of the scale of the problem, given the context of the limited set of top-level domain names we have now, because I think there has been some, how can I politely say it, fuzzy understanding of the process throughout the process by representatives of member states in this forum.
Okay, Laurence.
Okay. So regarding the intellectual property constituency, we are, as you can imagine, first, it's a very important issue for us, and we are still discussing this issue. There is no yet formal unique position in the IPC, and I think the deadline for commenting, I think is mid-May, so we have some time, but again, we are still in the process of discussing. Up to now, I think I can say that there is a common ground that the UDRP first works well, and that any expanded mechanism outside the trademark sphere should be really narrowly crafted, centered on harmonized areas of law, and that this mechanism must in any way not undercut the existing protections or add burdens as well on the existing procedures. So this is, I think, a common ground. Now, regarding the extension to the names of IGOs, there are different views at present on that. Some really believe that because of this extension, the UDRP may lose its narrowness, its uniformity, and it's a risk. That's also, there is a risk of slowing down the process, and which would not be a good thing, of course. This also refers to the Paris Convention for the Protection of Industrial Property and to specific articles which refer to trademarks protection for IGOs, but which don't refer to the protection of IGOs for as domain names. So there is always a risk of creating international law rules, whereas it's not the purpose of the UDRP, and the purpose is really to apply the rules but not to create new rules. So this is one view. On the other hand, I think we really have to be nuanced as well, and that if we go against this extension, we need to have good arguments, because we have a good system, I think, for trademarks, and we should really argue well if we are not in favor of extending the protection. So, but again, we are in the process of discussion. There is no unique position yet, but I think we can have one pretty soon, and then I will send it to you.
Thank you, Laurent. Ken Stubbs.
I think my comments were pretty well covered by the last two speakers, so I'll just pass on it right now.
Okay. Thomas?
Well, Thomas Wessler here speaking on behalf of the At-Large Advisory Committee. We have really just started to discuss the YP2 recommendations, so what I'm going to say now is mostly based on the things I've heard from, on the sense I've gotten from conversations and email exchanges with other committee members and the committee as a whole. I think that I can safely say that we will submit a separate comment on this topic to the board. These comments will most likely express our concern about one point which was in fact already mentioned by Laurent as one of the positions within the IPC. And that concern is that according to the WIPO 2 process report even, the recommendations under discussion now seem to amount to the creation of new international law. The WIPO 2 report explicitly states that there is no sufficiently harmonized international law in place in these areas, and we are deeply concerned about any notion that ICANN might get into the business of creating new international law. We do not believe that this is appropriate in any manner. So any further discussion of the recommendations themselves would have to be very careful about avoiding would have to be very careful not to leave the area of what of the area of existing law, of implementing existing law. If one person quite nicely put it, in fact, ICANN, from our point of view, is about architectural support for existing law, not about new law. Besides that, we have a number of specific observations we may pose about some of the recommendations. Some of these observations go into the direction of what Milton mentioned before, namely that some of these recommendations seem to heavily refer to use of domain names, that is, to net content, and we are very reluctant and not enthusiastic at all to see how I can get into that business. Other concerns we have are too detailed to discuss now, and we'll send you a copy of the advice, of course. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Tom. I think it's also worth, now that we have a liaison with the Government Advisory Committee, that I perhaps ask Audrey if he'd like to comment at all.
Commenting regarding the WIPO 2 recommendations in particular or in general?
About the WIPO recommendations and the government advisory position on it. Yeah.
Okay, I'll preface by saying that my role as GAC liaison is simply to is not to speak out of turn. So any comments I make represent accepted GAC views as opposed to my own opinions on matters or Canada's own opinion on matters. So the GAC discussed WIPO 2 at the meetings in Rio. And we in principle are advising the ICANN board to implement WIPO 2 recommendations. We are suggesting that a working group be set up, some kind of working committee within the GAC that would look better within the GAC, and I would look better about how actually what the actual mechanics of these WIPO 2 recommendations would be. So that's where the GAC stands. We're actually, haven't heard any new word about the working committee being set up, but that's where we stand right now.
Okay, thank you for that.
Thank you.
Okay then, well, to summarize, is there anyone else wanted to speak, sorry?
I'd actually like to ask a question of our GAC liaison.
Sure.
Yeah, go ahead, Marilyn. Yeah.
It's Marilyn Cade. Is it possible for you to clarify for us, I know there was discussion about this within the GAC, are there published minutes or anything which would be helpful to us?
There are actually, as we were saying that, I'm opening up the internet to the right site. The GAC communique from Rio has a section, I think it's section 4 in the GAC communique from Rio,
uh-huh.
Actually has a section on our comments about WIPO 2. Let me just see if I can open it up. I don't know if it helps for me to...
Yeah, I've actually copied them, Audrey, into the agenda for the meeting. So if you look at the agenda under item 7,
there's
three paragraphs, yeah.
I don't really think it's necessary to read it, Audrey, but I just think, I noticed it there, Bruce. I think it's very helpful for all of us to know that we can go refer back to that.
Yes. Sorry, that mean that given the agenda item, it's all copacetic? Sorry, given the communique minutes?
In the agenda I copied from your GAC communique, you have three paragraphs that related to the WIPO recommendation.
That's right, yeah. I didn't know if, I don't know if that was Marilyn who had another question about it.
But yeah, my question is whether there's anything more extensive than that that illuminates the discussion. But probably not. But and that in and of itself is very helpful. Thank you.
I think this communique is on the WIPO 2.0. Yeah, does capture both what I said and the GAC's position on this.
If I can just sort of summarize, I guess what I'm hearing, just listening to people collectively, what I suggest the council does is respond back to the board and say that we believe that the issue should be considered separately to the existing UDRP, and that it is likely that a policy development process would be required to look at the detail of how to actually implement such a recommendation as a dispute resolution process. And I think that's consistent with what the GAC is saying, that the GAC is saying that it believes a working group should be formed.
Yes.
Certainly in relation, and I guess, is that a working group? If I just read the wording.
You're
talking about a joint working group there.
Yeah, with other I think.
Yeah.
It's
and I think, I mean, the GNSO's interest would be related to GTLD areas specifically and not related to CCTLDs in any way. But I think the appropriate thing is that we would advise the board that the issue should be considered separately to UDRP, which is aimed at trademarks, and that we that it would need to be subject to a separate policy development process.
And I think the GAC's response to that would be right now that, I mean, the GAC wouldn't disagree with that, but the GAC wouldn't necessarily agree with that. As of yet, and I think it goes to the third paragraph, that it'd be an issue of setting up the working group to even consider that issue in and of itself.
Sure, yeah.
Bruce, Philip, I think your suggestion to make those 2 points to the board is excellent. I'd also draw your attention to the email that Louis sent, in which he has suggested that the board affirmed at its last meeting its own belief that once it's received these comments that we just talked about, that indeed a policy development process should be initiated in the GNSO to cover the issues discussed in the WIPO letter. So I think what we're saying is consistent with the thinking of the board, and therefore it seems like a very wise thing to be saying.
Yeah. So if I can just say we're providing two pieces of advice. One is that we believe it should be considered separately to the existing UDRP, which is aimed at trademarks. So it's the first point. The second point is we believe that it should be subject to a policy development process to look at how it could be implemented, and taking into account a thorough examination of the issues surrounding the recommendation.
Yeah.
Okay, do I have a proposer then to resolve to present that as advice?
I'm happy to propose that.
The seconder for that? Anyone seconding that?
Ken Stubbs, I'll second. I'm sorry,
Ken?
I was muted on.
Thank you. Any further discussion on that advice? Okay, I'll just call for a vote then. All those in favour say aye.
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 Any against? Any abstentions? Okay, we'll note that as passed unanimously. This has been a useful precursor, I guess, to the next item of the agenda, which is the EDRP itself, because one of the things I wanted to understand is whether we wanted to consider this as part of the EDRP task force or separately, and I think what we've resolved is we consider it separately. The EDRP task force was created some time ago, and I think really it hasn't been in active work for some time. What I propose is we close down the current task force, which was created under the old Names Council, and re-initiate a policy development process under the new GNSO. And the first part of that process is to get the staff manager, the ICANN staff manager, to prepare a report on what issues there may be with UDRP. And I would expect that the report would be looking at not just how the UDRP has been applied to the original ComNet Nord registry, but also how the UDRP has been applied in the new GTLDs, such as Biz and Info, and also the the sponsored names such as Museum and Aero. So what I'm proposing, I guess, is that the council vote at this meeting to start the policy process from scratch again, and seek an issues report from the ICANN staff manager, and that we close down the current task force that was created under the Names Council. Then anyone like to get in the queue to comment on that?
I would, Bruce. Marilyn.
Me too, Bruce. Jeff Newman.
Okay, Marilyn. Jeff, anyone else?
Philip.
Anyone else? Laurence, you probably should be in the queue again as well.
No! Well, if you want. Okay. No, I'm kidding, yes.
Okay. Anyone else? Okay, Marilyn, go ahead.
Bruce, it's an excellent idea. I support. I would only like to suggest one small change, and that is I know that the existing task force has done a considerable amount of work and analysis, and so I think inherent in your proposal would be, but I'd just like to make it explicit, that we thank the existing task force for their efforts, and we ask to have the analysis and work they've been able to do so far prepared and sent to the staff to be considered in the development of the issues report.
Yes, I think that's an excellent suggestion. Thank you. Jeff?
Yes, thanks. I was actually a member of the UDRP task force in 2001, so that just tells you how long the task force has been going on. I completely support the Bruce, your recommendation to start over, pretty much. The one caveat to what Marilyn had said, there is a survey out there that is incredibly old and incredibly out of date, and I would hate for that survey to be used any more than for archive purposes in any analysis by any future task force. I think, and I tried in early 2002 to argue this to the UDRP task force. So I just caution any use of that survey any further than it's already been used because of how out of date it is.
Okay, so I mean, I think what you're saying is that the date of the survey and the context in which it was provided needs to be considered. I mean, I don't think it's a case of ignoring the survey, but it's a matter of understanding that it was in the context before the new TLDs existed.
Exactly.
And probably prior to the real boom in domain names as well, I suspect.
Right.
Okay. Philip?
Yeah, I think probably the course of action you're suggesting, Bruce, is right, given the loss of direction that happened on this task force. I just wanted to remind everybody that this particular task force was a little unusual in makeup, in that it had a considerable number of third-party expertise brought into it, and we may just need to think about the way that we communicate to the task force as a whole, recognizing that there are a lot of people who are participating in an ICANN process for the first time.
Yes, and I think certainly under the new policy development process there is the option to add third-party expertise to task forces.
Yeah.
And certainly I think, as Marilyn pointed out, we certainly want to thank those members of the task force for the work that they've done so far. And we're not really it's really now it's time to take stock, I think, and now that we have ICANN staff, and certainly in future months, that are capable of doing some of the analysis, it pretty much takes some of the burden off those task force members in collating material and get them to actually focus on the policy aspects. Okay. What have I got next? Laurence, yeah, if you could provide an intellectual property perspective.
I'm not sure I can, but first, I agree with your suggestion, Bruce, of regarding the process of how to make this task force survive again and produce work which can be even more useful. Regarding the survey, 2001 is not so old, I think, so I really think it can be a reference still. I'm not so familiar with the work which has been done up to now, however, but I think the survey can be a good reference. I'm not sure whether the response had been analyzed after. I think I should say that J. Scott had, for very specific personal reasons, certainly couldn't keep on the work with the task force, and that's all I can say for the moment. But we fully support your suggestion, Bruce, anyway.
Okay, thanks, Lauren. Anyone else want to speak on this topic? Okay, what I propose we do then is we have a motion that thanks the current UDRP task force for the work that they have done, and that we will close that task force down at this stage, that we will initiate a policy development process and request the ICANN staff manager to produce an issues report, that one of the inputs to the issues report will be the material and analysis that has been done so far by the UDRP task force. I think we should again give a 45-day period for that analysis to be done, just given the current workloads of the ICANN staff. I think that pretty much captures it. Do I have a proposal for that as a motion? I reckon you can propose that, Marilyn.
I'm sorry, Ruth. I was unable. I was on mute. Can I just say that, yes, I do propose that.
I second.
Thank you, Lawrence. Okay. Any further discussion on that as a motion? Okay. I'll put it to the vote then. All those in favour say aye.
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 All those against? Any abstentions? Okay, we'll note that motion has passed unanimously. Okay, I think that's pretty much concluded the business for this meeting. I guess under any other business, I perhaps raise one final point, and that's really just a comment to Audrey from a GAC liaison point of view. Given that any new policy does need to be sent to the GAC to confirm if they wish to comment on it, it's probably appropriate that the GAC looks at the DELETE task force work at this stage. In its current report or its current form, if there's a mechanism for you to perhaps at least inform the Government Advisory Committee that the DELETE task force work exists.
I will certainly do that.
And secondly, just a question for you.
Yes.
At the Rio meeting, the board referred the transfers work to the Government Advisory Committee. I just wondered if you had any update on what the GAC plans were in regards to the transfers recommendations.
I don't have any updates on that. I have some instincts, but I don't want to speak out of turn. But what I could do is I could talk with the GAC chair and secretariat and just confirm my instincts and get back to you.
That would be helpful, yeah. Because I think, just again, as an ongoing thing, having the liaison with the GAC, I think, is very important. And if you can advise the GAC as new policy gets towards final stages, that they can be conveyed to the GAC, and if you can then, in the reverse direction, convey to us perhaps new working groups that the GAC's considering, or convey to us any feedback on any policy work that we're working on.
I could use this opportunity to say that so the GAC set up 6 working groups at the Rio meeting, two of which would be directly interesting, I think, to you guys, the GTLD working group, which I'm on and which is beginning to come together, and a working group on who is. So these are some working groups that might be very relevant to the GNSO.
Okay.
Now, these working groups are still in their nascent stages, but as...
I can guess that's correct, yeah. But perhaps we might want to try and do something perhaps formally for the Montreal meeting in June, where we perhaps exchange information, in that the GNSO can do a presentation to the GAC on sort of work on progress and vice versa, if the GAC could provide a presentation to the GNSO on what's going on in working groups.
We should certainly talk about that offline a bit further. The idea, we can talk about that a bit more.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, it's just under the any other business category of flagging some things to think about, yeah. Yeah, I don't want to put you on the spot. For the next meeting, one of the things that we do need to do is look at the rules of procedure for the GNSO Council. We need to get new rules of procedure approved by the Council for forwarding to the Board. Glenn, as the GNSO Secretariat, has attempted to, I guess, collate what's in the ICANN bylaws and what was in the original Names Council procedures. But I'm sure that that combined document can deal with further work, so I encourage council members to have a look at that. I expect we'll be ratifying the election for Board Seat 13 at the next meeting. We should get an update on the budget and I believe, certainly make sure that the constituencies are paying their dues for the 2003 year. I expect we'll be trying to finalise our advice on the structure for additional GTLDs. And I'm also expecting to receive the staff manager's report on privacy for that meeting on the 22nd of May as well. So that being said, I think looks like we've finished a bit early. If there's no other business, I'll close the meeting now.
Bruce, there was no problem. Right, Bruce?
Yes, sir. Yeah,
are you still on the phone? There was no problem for the ratification of the seat number 14, as you had no IPC members on the call?
I had Linda Roisch.
Okay, right.
And she confirmed Jay Scott's proxy at that point.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
The voting for that, I think we had 13 members at the time that voted to ratify the motion. There was nobody against, and that came to a total of 18 votes.
For Mike Pallage?
Okay. Yes, that's correct, yeah.
Okay. And for the DE Task Force, it was delayed?
Sorry, Lawrence?
For the DELETE Task Force, the recommendation?
Yes, the DELETE Task Force, we've recommended that an implementation committee be formed to have a look at it, comprising some registries and registrars, to spend a couple of weeks just going into a bit more detail, getting the wording right. Then the task force will then consider the input from the implementation committee and then finalise its report for the council.
Okay, great. That's great. Sorry again.
It's okay.
Thank you.
No problem.
Bye-bye.
Okay, thank you all.
Bye.
Bye.